watch the struggle, and I want you wrestling with them angels.
Here he is, from Auburn University, Bo Jackson.
The correct Jordan-Hare Stadium time is 8:41 p.m. Central Daylight Time. Your digital audio device is tuned to the Orange and True podcast, harbored by your friends at collegeandmagnolia.com. Greetings and salutations, Orange and Truthers. It is I, Drew Croson, at CenterCrow2 on Twitter, at CenterCrow on Venmo. To one side of me through the magic of the internet, the rumor monger, Ryan Starrett, at Ryan S. Starrett. The S stands for still doing this. To the other
still
side of me.
Almost 100 episodes.
The other side of me, also through the ether, giving you full Fort Payne ASMR. Chief, do you read me?
You saying you want a piece of me?
R.I.P. R.I.P. Frank. AU Chief, how are you today?
I'm doing all right. Doing just fine.
Good. On today's show, we get into it. We've got a lot to cover today, boys, and we have a special guest to help us cover it. We're bringing in guests now because we have run out of content because there are zero sports. And one of our guests we're bringing in is a guy named Thomas Northcutt, student manager for the Auburn basketball team, 2014-2018, probably one of the two winningest four-year stretches in Auburn basketball history, I would say. Maybe 15-19 or 16-20 would have something to say about that, but I would say 14-18, nothing to sniff at.
Yeah. Somebody had to get him started.
Now currently a graphic designer for Rutgers Athletics. Go Knights. Mr. Thomas Northcutt.
Thank you for letting me be your backup plan. I am so honored to know that I am who you call when you have no other options. I'm flattered, honestly.
Well, I sent a DM to Jared, and he hasn't gotten back to me, so you're...
Get used to that.
yeah, I figured
Jared,
as much.
I love you. If you happen to listen to this, please...
There's a 0% chance Jared Harper listens to this program.
I know.
You just got to do another song and send it to him.
I don't even know if he knows the song, besides the fact that people played it for him.
I mean, the band, Bruce.
Right.
I mean, that was Bruce's speech after the Kentucky game. How can he not know it?
If the I'm funniest not mis- part about if, it. Oh, go for it, Chief.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't Rutgers one of the first games of the Tony Barbie era?
Sure.
That was that
what year?
Right.
A rough segue there.
Did he started in 09, didn't he? Or yeah. So it was the year after. So never mind. I was just thinking about it. When we were talking about Rutgers, I just kept thinking. I was like, I know we played them in basketball at some point, and I went to the game. So anyway.
Thomas, we have a number of questions to ask you on our show notes. Like dozens, it looks like.
That's what I see. I'm ready for this. Let's bring it on.
Well, the first question I want to ask you, most importantly, what's it like to be part of the backbone of Auburn Twitter?
So, here's the thing. Here's the most important story behind that.
Sure.
I am the reason that phrase exists.
Great.
At all. A couple of us. I am the original tweet. If you look up the backbone of Auburn Twitter with a trademark symbol, my tweet is the one that started it all. It was 8A weekend, 2018, my senior year. December of 2017, a big group of us had this ridiculous Twitter thread where we tweeted about the perfect Auburn wedding, which included having, I believe it's the nun officiate inside the Boom Boom Room at Sky Bar. And as the bride is walking down the aisle, having the eagle fly, among other things. But eventually we all got in a group DM, whatever. It was just a group of friends. We all met up 8A weekend, had a great time on 8A. Next day we got together, ate brunch, as anybody does. And afterward we went and took some photos around campus just for yucks. I tweeted that as a joke. Just like, I mean, who puts a trademark on their tweet except for...
Apparently you.
Only people with the clearest sarcastic intentions. And... Little did I know that it would become a quintessential meme in Auburn folklore.
Yeah. Auburn Twitter is a is a can be a nasty place.
Oh yeah.
Did you look at that?
Both in every way to just to define that word nasty can be all of those things.
It's Twitter is a beautiful place, and when you hit certain parts, it's like in The Lion King. The kingdom is where all the light touches, but you don't go where the light doesn't touch.
Is that
there are certain parts of all parts of Twitter where you just are like, it's dark over there. I'm gonna stay over here.
So what about the part that steals content, maybe, theoretically? Maybe a graphic that you made? Just
throw that out there. A couple of us have had their content stolen on this here.
There are certain people who just they don't quite know the correct way of crediting people.
They know.
Sharing
they
know. Their opinions in a way that doesn't get all of their followers like, shut up. Some people need to stick to the content aggregation. I'll leave it at that.
I only have the one content and it keeps getting stolen, so I don't even know. I don't know what it must be like to have more than one content.
I can't see it, so I have been blocked for many years now.
Who hasn't?
There.
I don't think I've been blocked.
I think I not finally got blocked a couple years ago. No, it took me. I tried because I tried really hard and I finally got blocked.
Here's the most important question. Does it mean more to be blocked by them or by Tony Barbie?
By them, because I think Tony used some sort of like,
I am blocked.
I think Tony used some sort of, block list or something. Cause I got blocked and I never said anything to him. Like I don't.
Just blocked like all of AU Twitter.
I mean, cause you can use block lists somehow. You can, there's things you can do that just go through and block a bunch of different people. So he must have done that. Cause the only thing I'd ever done is tweet who saw it burn, but I didn't even at him. And then I was blocked. So
who saw it burn?
Maybe he just searched that term. Well,
I wouldn't be surprised if he had like a manager or an intern or someone up at Kentucky, someone in the social media department, take his phone over, his Twitter account over and just like set it up for him.
Yeah.
That's funny because I thought he was the intern at Kentucky.
Oh.
Reggae horn.
Thanks. Thanks for the clarification.
Thomas, did any players, this is a question that we have on here that actually Chief and I talk about a lot. Did any players openly complain while at Auburn about not getting to wear their Nikes?
You know, when I was there, nobody ever necessarily complained about having to wear Under Armour. Yes, we complained about some of their stuff at the beginning. When I first started, their stuff was hot garbage in some capacities. I mean, when you look at when they first signed on, we talk about it. We talked about it a lot whenever I was a manager. There's like multiple ACL tears on the basketball court. For our men's and women's team in that time frame, when they first signed on, and their stuff wasn't that comfortable at first. Like even their tennis shoes, the first pair of shoes I ever got when I started as a manager, like I had matching holes in the pinky toes within like a month of getting them. They're awful. But the one good thing that happened is Steph Curry. I became a closet Warriors fan, not because I have any rooting interest, but because the better Steph Curry did, the better their gear got.
Yeah.
And the shoes got so much better. The gear got so much better. I rooted openly for the Warriors in the finals every year. And I stand by that because it meant that we got better stuff the next year if they won. And that stuff really helped out. By the time I graduated, everyone was pretty happy with it, really comfortable. The complaints really came not to wearing Under Armour, but having to wear the same color or having to like try and match. Eventually we gave up on that, but
yeah, I've complained for a long time about how they don't make shoes with our colors. Like they just don't, it's like Tennessee orange or like a different, like nothing matches quite right. And it bothers me still to this day.
It's one of those things that I've learned over the years. It's hard to match like certain color, like, and this is just me getting into like the nitty gritty of like the industry talk, but it's like certain colors of like fabrics or certain colors of like, you know, how they dye the rubber or X, Y, or Z. They're not going to be able to find, you know, the perfect you know, color combo of any shade, really. I mean, you look at most teams, if you look like the colors, like even like you look at what Nike does with different schools that are red, I guarantee you that Alabama's jerseys are the same color as Arizona's. Like, sure. It's that same shade of red. Our jerseys at Rutgers wind up being the same color as anyone else on Adidas who wears red. So it's
Louisville,
Nebraska, Indiana, even, you know, it all winds up being about the same just because that's the way that the producers sort of wind up making stuff. So
there's just a guy in Taiwan got the one red.
So you're telling me Dwight Howard was not a big enough player to make the Under Armour product better? Because he was he was their big guy before.
Was he on Under Armour?
Yeah.
I don't remember him.
Oh yeah.
I remember DeAndre Jordan was an Under Armour guy early too.
Dwight Howard
switched to Jordan.
And they had just the awfulest worst shoes.
Now they got what's his name? Joel Embiid, and his shoes are gross looking. But
do not disrespect Atlanta Hawks legend Kent Bazemore.
Yes, he was an Under Armour guy. And Brandon Jennings. Remember
Did they have signature shoes? Dwight Howard had a signature shoe.
Steph Jennings was the first one that ever had like the full line of anything when I was there. Yeah. Like I don't remember anything else before that. It was all like they have the same names, like, you know, the Vaporwave or the Hyper Dunk. Yeah. That's Nike, but you know what I mean. Yeah. Like all of them have those Nike buzzword speech. Phrase. Yeah.
Yeah. I have a pair of Curry 6s. I actually like them a lot.
I always, by the time I graduated, like Under Armour shoes, really solid. Tennis shoes are great. Guys never really complained about the shoes by the time we got to the end of my time there. They've come a long way. The big thing I like to say is, and I think I'm stealing this from someone else, but you can really tell that Nike was a program that started out as a shoe company that grew into other things, whereas Under Armour was like a clothing company that grew into shoes.
Right.
Yeah,
I can't even remember when we signed the deal if I don't even think they made shoes at that time.
Let me tell you what happened, Chief. This is
I've heard the story. You were in the trenches when this happened.
I was
in
the belly of the beast when this happened. But one of the funniest things ever was our first year on the Under Armour deal in Lebo's years. The team wore for the very first year, they wore whatever they wanted. So some guys were in Nike, some guys were whatever.
It's just like hilarious. When we're on Russell,
high school team.
Yeah.
The second year, they wore and won.
Oh God!
Auburn was one of the only and one sneaker company.
Were they all in
mixtape baby?
And if you look at the pictures, that was also back when. Like everyone was wearing the baggiest shorts.
Yeah.
So like,
did we sign a
Dwayne Reed?
With
I remember Dwayne Reed having like his shorts came down mid chin, and then his N1 Tai Chis. I mean, it was dope, but it was, you know, the team wasn't very good.
Did baggy jerseys,
baggy shorts, N1s, high socks was the look.
Did we have a deal with And1 or did
we Under had a deal with And1?
Oh, okay, I didn't know if we had it or if Under Armour like. Somehow made a deal with
I believe I might be speaking out of school here, but I believe that they had a deal with Auburn where Auburn could sign deals for apparel that Under Armour did not make.
Right. That sounds right.
So like the track team wore Nike spikes and might to this day still wear Nike spikes.
I don't know why you wouldn't. Because
I think they do because Under Armour doesn't really do the track and field stuff.
Right.
I know a lot of those contracts still apply for like you look at swimming, you look at equestrian.
Yeah.
That makes
sense. I mean, like, and so basketball is part of that. So basketball had N1 sneakers, and then they had. You can look on eBay. You can still sometimes find the Auburn. Under Armour sneakers that actually have the AU logo on them that were from
like the first
Brandon Jennings edition Under Armour shoe.
Wow.
Now, is this at the same time that they put in the Croc stickers inside of Beard Eves? That is my favorite part of Beard Eves. It's not anything in the arena. It's in the concourse. They have Crocs, Auburn Croc stickers on the floor.
Dude, that arena, the beef, as I called it.
Oh, the beef.
Not a great spot.
Still standing.
It looks great. Like it looks way more like a sporting venue from the outside than Auburn Arena does. And when I ride by it, I'm like, man, it looks so cool, and it looks gigantic.
It looks like a coliseum.
Yeah, well, that's what it is.
Yeah, they could flood it and have naval battles inside of it.
I mean, they used to play ice hockey in there, right? So,
Ryan, ask Tom. You have any questions for Thomas? Ryan, ask Thomas a question.
Okay.
Ask me a question, Ryan.
Thomas, you're a Tennessee guy, right? By birth?
By birth, yes.
So how'd you end up at Auburn?
Long story short, just to clarify for the people at home, I am a descendant of three generations of Tennessee grads.
Oh, wrecked
I, oh yeah. I was born in Knoxville. My parents met at Tennessee. You know, I grew up ride or die, Bruce Pearl, whoever was the coach at the time, mostly Phil Fulmer. We don't really acknowledge anything after that.
Not a big Dooley guy.
I owned the orange pants, man. I'll own up to that. I had a pair. I think I wore them better, but you know, I also did not have an accompanying stool with mine, so to sit on sidelines and everything. But no, my family, when I was in about just about to start eighth grade, well, during the middle of like the 08 recession and all that, my dad lost his job. He's an electrical engineer. And as you do when you're an engineer and you need a job, you move to Huntsville, Alabama. And so right before eighth grade, my family moved down to Huntsville. I was ride or die Tennessee up until about my senior year, when I sort of realized that out-of-state tuition is expensive. And I just knew that it was not going to be fun to pay that off. And I also have two younger sisters, and I was like, I don't want my parents to have to pay a ton for me and then have them come after that. But the fun story for me is Tennessee actually lost my transcript when I applied. I applied there in like July or June or whenever it opened. The day I
got... You're used to losing stuff from Alabama.
Yeah. you can say that again. The day I got my acceptance letter to the University of Tennessee was the day of the 2013 last week of the regular season for football. I had been invited to my first Iron Bowl party.
Oh.
And I was wearing an Auburn shirt the moment my mom handed me a letter that was just that bright orange. And I go, I think this is a sign. And then I watched the game. And then I was like, you know, I think someone's trying to make a point here. And as Chris Davis, you know, was carried by angels across that field, I realized my destiny. And now that was actually the moment where I was like, all right, I know I had already fallen in love with the campus tour and everything, but... Yeah. That was, I mean, who doesn't? It's a great place. And, we fast forward to about March, and I was already trying to become a basketball manager, and they announced that the new guy who had been hired was, was my boy Bruce. About a month later, I got, a call, and they hired me as the manager, and the rest is history.
Well, I guess that answers my question. You're not related to former Auburn kicker Brian Northcutt, then?
Not that I'm aware of. The way I introduce myself to every single person in Auburn is, "Hi, I'm Thomas Northcutt, like the realtors, not related." Because my number one fear is somebody going, "Are you related to those people?"
Yeah, yeah.
They screwed me out of so much money.
Yeah.
I like my face is all I really have some days, so... I like to try and keep that in a nice condition.
Yeah.
I don't believe a single person in Lee County has ever gotten their deposit back.
Oh, no, never.
Period.
Never, not
I ever. Don't care. It doesn't matter who your realtor is or who your agency is. You're not getting your deposit back.
The trick to getting away from Northcutt is just go to the trailer life. At Ridgewood, Gentilly.
I wish.
Can't get you there.
One of my own personal regrets is that I did not try to become a manager at Auburn. So why don't you tell us what the process to doing that is? Like, do you just apply? Do you have to interview? What do you do to do that?
It's actually changed since I was being involved and starting to get involved. I started reaching out to people when I was a senior in high school. I had been a high school manager at Grissom High School for 4 years. Okay. Virgil, I represent. But the when I reached out and I was first applying and everything, Tony Barbie was still the head coach. And I actually had a meeting set up with the coaching staff for my when I was on spring break. I was going down to visit. I was meeting with different departments and everything for, you know, the academics or whatever. But but the people I was supposed to meet with were all unemployed when I got down there. And I there's two people who I'm always very thankful for. They're both still in the arena, and I know they're probably not listening to this, but Bianca Webb and Bridget Graba. I love you both. Thank you. Bianca was a manager at the time, and Bridget has been the receptionist for men's basketball for as long as her husband has been the gymnastics coach.
I was going to ask any relation.
They live together, I guess.
There's no one listening to this.
You never know.
It's just us.
they wound up passing my information on to Todd Golden. And I called a lot, probably too much, just trying to make sure, just trying to talk to Todd. And eventually they honored the commitment of the old staff who was going to hire me. And so I always say thank you to them because that's how I got in. Nowadays, I think you have to email, not sure who would be responsible, but, I get asked all the time still who I would reach out to. Whoever is the director of operations is generally a good person to go to. You send your email. You send an email with your resume and say you're interested, which, you know, your resume is, I was a basketball player for 4 years in high school and I was a lifeguard and I might have worked at an ice cream shop in the summer.
Those are my qualifications. Can I still be a manager now?
I mean, as long as you say, I like basketball and I will take it seriously, then they'll at least, I mean, that's the first thing it takes. I think now they'll bring you in for an interview and they'll sit you down with a couple people. And if they think you're good, they'll bring you in. Like I said, I got real lucky with mine. So my process was way different than anybody else's.
Right.
But,
well, you got in on the ground floor of a nice little project too.
Oh, we went in and I was there from the very beginning. You know, I remember being in the arena the night that coach's show cause got lifted. I remember, they were always asking coach about what it takes to you know, change a program around, take it from, you know, the ground up and change a culture. You know, we're trying to redefine a culture of basketball in Auburn. Yeah. You know, we had Charles Barkley, and so trying to take people away from just Charles and having, you know, 15 years of a lack of success. You know, we being around Coach Pearl is incredible. That man, love him to death. He's such just a nice guy, and he's very genuine, and he knows how to market the hell out of a program.
Oh yeah.
That man, and me, my degree's in marketing, so I'm just sitting here like, wow, you're really good.
Should have gotten class credit for it.
I wish.
The thing I noticed about him pretty early on, and I've told the story on the pod before, I think, but is that he is nice and everything that you just said, but he also doesn't accept anything but the best from everybody.
Oh yeah.
And that's something that really had to change and within Auburn basketball specifically. And it took a while, but and I'm sure you saw it take a while.
Oh, yeah.
I think it is finally fully settled in now.
The big thing you got to do with those is you got to have guys that'll buy in, and it takes a while, you know, especially when you're coming in with guys from someone else's coaching staff. They're not always going to buy in right off the bat. And thankfully, you know, we had a great guy and like someone like KT who really rallied the troops and was bought in from day one. And I'm really glad that he's been brought back as a GA because he's going to be phenomenal for that program.
That's awesome.
KT is one of the hardest working people I've ever met and one of the sweatiest, but that's not the point.
Speaking of great guys,
he's got to go up against Bruce.
Speaking of great guys, what was the Simeon Bowers era like?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Cinnamon Toast Bowser. What a guy. he is a character. It's one of those things where if when he put his mind to something, he was amazing. And he had the raw talent, you know. I genuinely remember watching him, like, on his senior day, looking around and being like, man, if I had, like he said something to the extent of, like, man, if I had, like, exerted myself a little bit harder, I could have been going for 20 and 10 every night. And we all were kind of like, yeah. That dude was just a monster. Just size-wise, that dude was huge. And an absolute mess.
Point guard.
That Arkansas game might go down as one of the most underrated games in Auburn basketball history.
Point guard. He plays in Serbia?
I think so. He's been all over.
Yeah.
He was playing in the U.S. for a while. Wasn't he on
He played in the G League for a couple of years. He played in TBT last year or 2 years ago.
Yeah, for
Marquette.
Yeah, he was on the – he's from Racine, Wisconsin. So he was up there and he played for
Wisconsin Herd.
It was the Marquette team, I think, wasn't it?
Well, in the G League, he played for the Bucks.
I got you.
He was something else. It's so funny seeing all those guys go all over the place too. I mean, Antoine Mason at the time, he's been over in Canada, killing it for the Halifax Hurricanes the last couple years.
Yeah.
I genuinely I still keep up with all of them just because, those guys have gone all over. I mean, even guys like Horace playing down in Argentina this year and
tearing it up in Argentina too.
All I'm saying is I love Horace. Horace is my guy. I mean, that guy's and his child is one of my favorite people I've ever met. Avery Spencer is an incredible child. And he's got great parents that are going to just love him to death. But the him and classic Malik out there in Germany has been playing well. And that was an era that I really loved. Like when being on the court with Horace and Malik out there before games, those guys are so much fun. Those guys are like, those are your energy guys. They're out there. There's all the classic clips of Malik singing, but that was an everyday thing. Like every game. I remember being in the locker room. The first time the Let's Get It song was really sung was we were at Mississippi State. My senior year. Yeah. His first year, I was in the locker room cleaning up. And he started singing that song and all of our guys just slowly started bopping to it. And it was so much fun. I go back and watch the video from that all the time because there's this incredible clip of Chuma dancing in his locker. It is hilarious. And Chuma and I watched that on the plane ride back. We watched that video over and over just watching him dancing in the locker room. And then at the very end, if you watch it, he's blowing kisses to the fans in our in our section in Starkville. And I'm like, Chuma, we're just sitting back on the back of the plane laughing the whole time. Those guys are so much fun to be around.
Yeah.
Who was your favorite player to ever work with, in pregame or in practice?
I
think I know the answer. But.
Well, there's a few. I worked out a ton with KT his senior year. KT worked so hard. I mean, I would be in there every day. We'd be in there for an hour and a half doing a workout during the season, after the season. I'm going to circle back to this. When I say he is the sweatiest man I've ever met, sweatier than Coach Pearl, that KT would go through seven towels in an hour and a half long workout. I literally had to hang towels up to dry just so they might be me dry by the end of the workout. But KT worked so hard and he was so much fun to be with. He was a really smart guy, really quiet and really, just grinded. Anthony, he and I had the pregame routine my junior and senior year of going in and shooting before every game. Ryan and I have joked about it before, but Anthony's highest 3-point field goal percentage was during my senior year when we were every game without fail out there shooting before games.
Yeah, look what happened when he left.
I'm not saying, but if somebody was to say that I am the architect of the Anthony Mclemore 3, I wouldn't argue necessarily. I would say, no, don't give me that much credit. But it's not a bad, those guys are all great. I mean,
so you taught Anthony McLemore the shooting form that reminds me of the Death Star warming up.
Hey, that's when he made them. That's when he made them, when he tried to shorten it up. It doesn't work anymore.
Circus to air missile.
I didn't teach him that, but I was at, we got so many shots up that year. I still think one of the most heartbreaking moments for me was that South Carolina game. I was there and I just that whole moment, that whole day was just a mess. But the next game I was out there, I always got out there really early to wait on guys. Cause you never know when guys are going to come start warming up, but Anthony without fail was always the first guy out there. And I just remember standing out there before that, I guess it was the Bama game was the next game. And I just remember standing out there and waiting, and just, I waited like an extra 10, 15 minutes before anybody else came out there just by myself. And it was just like, and eventually he came hobbling out on crutches like halfway through the warm up. But I just remember being there like, Aunt, buddy. Those guys are great. I mean, Anthony, anyone on those, that 2017, 2018 team, you know, I love those guys. It was even to the point, like last year, St. John's came and played at Rutgers. And I know a couple of the St. John's managers, and I get a text from one of them out of nowhere. And it's like, hey, Mustafa wanted me to text you and make sure that he knows that he needs to see you before the game. And, I go down there before the game because I was working that night. I was going to take photos, and I hear from across the gym, Thomas! And I turn around, and it's Stoff, and I go over, dab him up, give him a hug. And so, I mean, all those guys are just – there's so many guys that I was really glad to work with. I mean, so many of those guys, especially those last few years, were just such good guys. You know, they always brought, you know, really positive energy. And, you know, I try and stay in contact with as many of them as I can. You know, I've done work for a couple guys and I still talk to a few of them whenever the time pops up, but and they all know that if they ever need anything, I got their back and vice versa. So it's you know, we always say it, but it's genuinely a family, and it's something that I'm really thankful for even to this day.
I have a Mustafa Heron question.
Yes.
It's like a press conference. I have a Mustafa Heron question. If Mustafa comes back, number one, Auburn national champs, beats Virginia, sure. But are they conference champs this year with Mustafa Heron as a senior?
It's so hard to say. It's so hard to say because Mustafa leaving opened up the lineup for other guys coming in.
Yeah.
You know,
I think that was Javon's scholarship, right?
That's true.
Probably
Samir was already there as
Samir.
Davion Mitchell was Javon's scholarship.
Davion would have been his. Which it's also so exciting to see like guys like Davion tearing it up down at Baylor this year and being number one in the country all year. But I'm trying to think. It's so hard to say just because you know how does that affect the lineup? How does that affect where other guys go? You know,
that's what I think. I don't know that it means we won a national championship because I don't know. You just don't know how everything works together.
Mustafa Bruce would have played Mustafa at the two because then Chuma can still cook at three. So you have Jared, Mustafa.
Well, what about Bryce?
Bryce
is your sixth man.
No.
Playing against other guys.
See, Mustafa's playing the three as opposed to Samir or Malik.
Yeah. Bryce is not starting.
Bryce. You tell him right now, Bryce Brown coming in off the bench.
Bryce's defense was a million times better than
that's the thing that people forget about. Bryce Brown is one of the top five greatest 3-point shooters in SEC basketball history. You can put that at, you know, take that to the bank. I'll stand by that. Him and Chris Lofton are two of the best guys I've ever seen shoot a basketball. But when you look at his defense, that kid was incredible. I mean, and I know
Bruce tells you bring Stoff off the bench, but I think you still got to play him at the two.
No, you bring Malik and Samir off the bench. Yeah, Malik, that's the option.
Mustafa's not sticking around for a third year to not start.
Yeah. It's so hard to tell just based off of, you know, what happens with so many things. I mean, and you know, he comes back. How does that affect chemistry? How does that affect X, Y, or Z? There's so many like small things you've got to like factor into it. It's hard to say. I don't really know. It also depends if you're asking regular season or a tournament, because those are two different animals.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. All right, well, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have some more questions for Thomas. And we're back, 35 minutes and 14 seconds into this program. All right, Mr. Northcutt, what's the best road environment you've been to?
Best road environment.
Could be SEC, Big Ten.
Well, I'll tell you this. One of my favorite road games that we ever played, Murray State. I'm not kidding. This was when Ja Morant was the year before Ja Morant became Ja Morant.
Yeah,
he was still insane, but that atmosphere was insane. You know, it was the first time an SEC team had come to Murray in 30 years. They had T-shirts. They were selling, you know, everything from that game. Those fans were so fired up. It was incredible, and that game was a mess. We finished that game with five players, pretty much, outside of the walk-ons, because Horace got ejected.
That's right.
Anthony hit his head on the rim blocking a shot and got a concussion. Deshaun Murray was having full body cramps. And I want to say Stoff was hurt. In some capacity, I think Mustafa got hurt that game. So our five on the floor were freshman Chuma, Jared, Bryce, Davion Mitchell at the two, and who would have been the center?
Not Horace.
It might have been Malik at center for like the last.
That sounds right.
That does sound right.
Because this is when Austin and Dangelo are both suspended.
Yes.
So you don't know those guys.
They weren't even on the trip.
Right.
Right.
That game. That
wasn't Cole Blackstock playing center?
He honestly might have got 2 minutes that game. Like we might have needed him for a breather at the end
best
of the
best tackler on the basketball team.
Hey, don't bash Big Cole. Big Cole Big Country's one of my favorites.
Hey, I feel like I'm the only one that remembers that he almost won the 3-point contest at the Pearl Jam. He was to beating Kareem Canty in the 3-point contest.
I forgot about that, man. That so much of that is it all comes flooding back. It all runs together after a while.
Yeah, yeah. Man,
there's so much of that. I'm trying to think what else though. I always agree with Anthony on his quotes on playing at Alabama. The most fun part about playing there is when you beat them.
Oh, yeah.
I remember getting called a glorified
ball boy.
No, not that. That was somebody.
That was from an Auburn fan.
That was from an Auburn fan. That was still my favorite Twitter header I've ever had. Cody, I love you. But I had to sit on the end of the bench that game because of however the seats lined up back there. So it was me and Pat and Will McCoy, Pat Kime and Will McCoy. And they were calling us, glorified, you know, high school, whatever. There were so many just names being thrown at us. It's men with like small children right next to them. but I remember like there was one year I was so petty and I like made eye contact with this dude that had been yelling at us all game. And I gave him a nice little wave at the end. And then I went and found a broom and put it in the locker room after we swept them that year. if anybody ever wants to know, there's a broom that's if you go around the corner outside of our locker room in Coleman Coliseum, they have a little utility area back there. There's a push broom and maybe another broom. I don't remember, but
is this where the sweet video came from?
That was the year after.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But
what, now, where is that in relation to where they land the or park the airplanes in there?
It is about where we are is like the concierge desk.
Oh, okay. All right.
Sure.
That place is a mess. Trying to think what other good places we went. You know, there's so many. I got to go to Hawaii where the Diamond Head Classic, that was a fun one.
What's the worst arena in the world, and why is it Vanderbilt?
I was going to say that. I literally, the worst place to work
a game. You don't like sitting below the court?
I don't like sitting on the baseline.
You know, like going through the looking glass just to watch a basketball game?
I already lose my voice in the game, but I don't want to lose my voice in the first half trying to yell at our guys. That place, I mean, I grew up in Nashville. I grew up a Tennessee fan, so I already don't like Vanderbilt. Bunch of nerds. But that court, it is an incredible home court advantage, but it should be burned to the ground.
Yeah, because it should be against the rules.
The ashes should be burned to the ground.
It's like having a court that's a hill going one way. Yeah, sure, a bit of home court advantage, but why would you do it?
Well, and then the coaches are like pretty far away from their bench, so the assistants.
It wasn't until like my senior year that they made the rule where coaches can go out to their normal coaching box spot there.
So it was weird.
For the longest time, you could only be on the baseline. And
they should at their baseball field at Vandy, they should put the dugouts in the outfield.
Yeah, sure. where the bullpen goes.
Yeah, exactly. That's the entire dugout.
The part of the reason
catcher's got to run all the way across the field every inning.
The baseball stadium, the football stadium, and the basketball arena are like all right next to each other. There's no space in between them because it's all crammed into downtown Nashville. So they'll never be able to tear that building down because it'll it'll infect
just
the entire city.
Just put the
benches
on the sidelines. It's not like it's an architectural issue, I don't think.
It's the width of the court. It's dumb. It's so dumb. That place is awful.
How is Tennessee's arena? Because I've been to it once and it did not seem that nice.
It's huge, isn't it?
Well, they've been renovating it bunch in the last couple of years. So like my senior year was the first time I ever got to go up there. And they had just redone all the visitors' locker rooms. The entire bottom floor is redone. It's honestly a really nice venue. It's 20,000 seats. It's the biggest on-campus arena in the country, I think. At least that's what it was when I was growing up and wearing the orange like that.
Yeah, it's really big. It just seemed when I guess I went there in 2013, so it would have been before that, the renovations. It seemed like a place that had been there forever and was probably remodeled in the 70s. And
that sounds right. If you want my honest opinion too, Rupp Arena is one of the most overrated venues in college sports. It is big and old.
That makes sense. I buy it.
Their locker room is insane. We walked back to their locker room and we had shoot around there. It's not fair. They literally, the floor walking into their locker room is the lane from their last national championship. And they have a wall with all their NBA players under Coach Cal. And that was in 2014, 2015, when it was, the year that Willie Cauley-Stein's on the team. Yeah. So they've added even more up there since. But outside of that, it's a pain in the butt to work because they don't let anybody sit behind the bench. We literally, if you watch like the film from that, there's four of us crammed on three of those tiny little bench stools. Because they sell all the seats back there. The Gatorade, however, is right next to the coaches, so you have to like crawl in front of people to get there. It's a big old dump. The fans aren't even that great.
I imagine they're like Alabama fans, like they're just.
Not
it's
like
the same group of people.
It's the same people. Yeah.
Yeah.
They just live in. They live in the hills, though.
Oh man, they're out in the sticks. But that trip was fun because I got to watch Simeon Bauer start a snowball fight with everyone getting off the bus after shoot around. So that was fun.
Man.
If you could have a video, like a videotape or videotape, Ryan. They used to call. Yeah, sorry.
Back to the VHS player.
Right. If you could have the video file of the goings on in the locker room before halftime and after any game that you were in the locker room of, to show to people and go, this is why I love doing what I did, what game would it be?
You know, I think of a handful. You know, obviously, I think of South Carolina 2018, senior year. That was amazing. You know, being a part of that day, was still incredible to me. I'll never forget that.
How can you forget the giant fathead of your face?
Trust me, I think I might still have it somewhere. I don't know.
Nice.
And Confetti Gate, lest we ever forget. Mm-hmm. good old Confetti Gate. But there's that. I think about the Georgia game that year. When we came out, we were down like 20, and we came back. Bruce fired him up at halftime and came back and went on that big tear. Went on like a 25-2 run or whatever to start the second half. Any game where Malik Dunbar is singing in general, just anything with Leak and Horace, those guys. Post game, being in the locker room after we beat LSU my freshman year in the SEC tournament, that was so much fun. Just that whole week, getting to be up. We stayed at the Opryland Hotel that week, and every morning I woke up having to do a 12-mile run across that whole building just to get to get to our conference room. But you know, that was so much fun. It's so hard to pick just because it's. You know, there's so many moments. And for me, too, one of my pregame traditions was always going in the locker room, and I would clean up the locker room before Coach Pearl wanted it to look good for TV because he always had the TV cameras in there. So my job, I would always disappear when the guy started stretching with Coach D to go and clean up the locker room. And so I would, as silently as I can, clean up the locker room as Coach is writing his pregame plan on the whiteboard. And those are moments that I always remember, too, just like, sitting in the locker room after I get, you know, water and Gatorade in everybody's lockers and make sure everybody's stuff is nice and clean, just sitting in there in the silence before the game, hearing the band play, hearing, you know, those moments, hearing the squeak of the whiteboard, having to just be around those moments, that brief pause of silence before the chaos that is game day. It's stuff like that I wish I could just have forever.
Very nice. Well, guys, any more questions for Thomas?
Sell us on being a Rutgers fan. How would you sell an Auburn fan on cheering for Rutgers?
Oh, right now, when it comes to basketball, it's easy.
Yeah.
When I started here, Steve Peichel had just been hired a couple years before, and they are in the exact same position Auburn was. You know, historically, not doing so hot in basketball, and this team is coming around. We just landed Cliff Omarui, which when they landed him, when he picked Rutgers over Auburn, I was surprised and amazed and so excited. We were confident the whole time here, but you know, it's one of those moments where you're like, okay, this is legit and would have made the tournament this year. I've always seen them as two years behind where Auburn was, at the same time. So like when I first started here, it felt like my junior or senior year where they're ironing things out. And they're one step away from making it. And then this year was that year where they made it. Granted, they didn't, you know, win the Big Ten, but the Big Ten this year is one of the best basketball conferences I've ever seen. Between that and then I'll tell you, college wrestling, man. College wrestling in New Jersey is a whole other animal. Wrestling here is people's life. They love wrestling up here in New Jersey and PA, and watching wrestling in person up here. I when I started here, I had no clue what was going on. I only have a little bit of a clue now, but it is so much fun to be around it and watch it. And it's different. It's going to take a while to sort of get used to it. But once you start to sort of understand what's going on and you get the intricacies of it and you sort of realize that it's a, like all the characters and unique personalities and people that are around the sport, it's a lot of fun.
Nice.
Chief, you have a question for Thomas?
I see on here, I feel like this is a setup. What are your thoughts on Mama Goldberg's?
Man.
Ooh, okay. I, like most people, I appreciate Mama Goldberg's. I like the food. Just mm-hmm. fine. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's good food. You can get a pitcher. It's a great time. The sandwiches there, I will say, are nothing extraordinary.
Okay.
I will be honest. I will go and eat there.
The nachos you don't have to tip, though. We have the variety of opinions on the side.
Granted, I also didn't grow up an Auburn fan, so I'm not the one of the people who's been indoctrinated in the church of Mama G since birth.
Well, you and Ryan both are about 10 years too late to experience good Mama Goldberg. So.
And good Auburn Twitter.
Oh, wow. Hot take.
As a part of the backbone, I would like to disagree. there's always good Auburn Twitter here.
Mama Goldberg's was good a long time ago. And when they went corporate, they lost something, and the sandwiches became different than they used to be. Frankly, they're not as soggy as they used to be. And they're not made by dirty hippies. So that makes a big difference.
That's the biggest difference. Yeah, I will walk into Mama G's and know what I'm going to get by who's working there.
If I don't smell patchouli when you're handing me my sandwich, I know it's not going to be good.
I put patchouli on today. As a matter of fact, Chief, I should have made you a sandwich.
I bet it would have been good.
Right after my bike ride.
Nice and soggy.
Well, guys, Thomas, it was nice having you on.
It's so
don't
thankful
be a stranger.
For you. Absolutely.
Are we not gonna hit any last dance before we go?
Oh, we can talk a little lot. Thomas,
MJ or LeBron?
What are we doing? What are we talking? Overall,
MJ or LeBron?
No,
answer the question.
Okay. I was thinking about this earlier because I saw it and I know it's controversial. If we're going one on one, I'm taking LeBron solely because of the size.
Yeah, he's.
He's
right now too. My God, MJ's weighs
57 years old.
Yeah, and he weighs about as much as LeBron does, but he's half his size.
Oh, you're talking about Heat LeBron? Heat LeBron weighed 290 pounds. Yeah. He got gigantic. Of just muscle. He lost a bunch of weight when he went back to the Cavs, and now he's the Lakers. But yeah, he got bulked.
Big.
I think you're discounting the fact that if push came to shove, I think MJ might pull a knife out of his sock and stab somebody to win.
Here's the thing. If Jerry Krause said that LeBron was winning that game.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. LeBron would be screwed. He'd be screwed.
All he had to do is Jerry Krause say, like, hey, I really like this LeBron kid. And Michael Jordan's like, man, Jerry Krause said that he liked LeBron. I have to kill him now.
Jerry MJ Krause would just make up something.
Yeah.
If Jerry picked MJ to win the game, MJ's going to lose on purpose.
Yeah. I think you're right about that.
A buddy of mine and I had this conversation about, like, if it's time machine or not. Time machine is different than Michael Jordan born in 1991 instead of 1960 or whatever.
Right.
Because LeBron spends over $1 million a year on his conditioning.
Sure.
Literally, he said he spends over $1 million a year on his workouts and conditioning and nutrition.
How he eats. He's not going out drinking every night.
Whereas Michael is smoking cigars before games.
Like, going out and gambling all night, yes, drinking all night.
Can you imagine Charles Barkley,
different.
If Charles Barkley had these resources and everything?
Right.
Draymond would be very quiet if he had these resources.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you look at Michael Jordan didn't start lifting weights until like 1989.
Yeah, that's the wildest thing. I was like, wait a minute, he didn't lift weights before?
And
Bo didn't lift weights either.
And now Bronny, like, LeBron's sons have been lifting weights since they were coming out the womb.
Yeah,
they were born with 1 pound weights in their hands.
To me, the time machine is a joke. Like, people are like, oh, if you took the 98 or 97 Bulls and put them in a time machine, they could beat any team from any era. I'm like, are you kidding me? The 2017 Warriors would wax.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you can't just time machine it. Like, if you do that, you have to be like, okay, here's 3 years to figure out how the game is played now. Then you play.
Like, you got to pick the rules. You got to pick the length of the three-point line. You got to pick what basketball they're playing with. I mean, there's so many small intricacies. Like, I mean, and nowadays basketball is so analytics driven that everything is the most efficient shot you can take. You know?
Realize that they did in 2016, I think, the year that the Cavs came back from a 3-1 deficit to beat the Warriors in the finals. That playoffs, they did a tracker on Steph Curry, and in the first three games of the Western Conference Finals, he averaged running over a half marathon.
That's wild.
A game.
Here's something I just recently discovered is I caught the very tail end of Larry Bird's career, and I thought of Larry as a shooter. This guy, you know, he could shoot the three ball and all this
but
stuff.
But he couldn't run.
Dude, he averaged like 3 3-point shots a game.
Right.
They just didn't shoot the three. It's so crazy.
It's not at all.
I mean, you even look at it when Charles was playing at Auburn, they didn't even have the 3-point line yet.
Right.
Like the 3-point line didn't come until the late 80s. You know, I think Jim
Valvano. There was one point in Barkley's career where he set a NBA record for most threes and a half, and it was 4.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about this last week. Didn't we talk about how Charles took like 300 threes one year? And Steph made 400 last year.
Yeah.
He made 400 threes. Chief about like listening to the Simmons podcast. The wildest thing they touched on from an analytics standpoint is the number of shots has not gone up from the 90s.
Right.
Like the teams are taking about the same number of total shots, but the number of available rebounds is nowhere near what it was in the 90s.
Yep.
So guys like Rodman wouldn't be getting 21 rebounds because there just aren't 21 rebounds to get because everyone is making all of their shots. Guys now just shoot an unreal percentage.
Yeah, that it's really wild to go back and watch some of these old games. And you're just sitting there watching and you're like, you'll watch for like 20 minutes and you're like, wait a minute. There's like taking 1-3 this entire time.
Hey, like, Shaq, go get in the pick and roll with Penny Hardaway one time, please. Yeah. What are we doing?
I mean, and then you look at it, too, with, like, just, like, the resources. You know, the one thing that everybody still has from the 80s and 90s is the gun. You know, shooting on the gun that'll pass it back to you. But, like, when by the time that I was leaving, like, my senior year at Auburn, we had this thing installed in our practice gym that would, like, read out, like, your shot arc and, like, where in the rim you're shooting. And like we're analyzing what the ideal shot arc is and what your best spots are, and we're, you know, they're running plays and we're designing things just based on where you shoot best because we have the technology now where everything is broken down to a science.
You know how much of a maniac Michael Jordan was back then. Imagine what kind of maniac he would be now with all this stuff.
Yeah, all the computers.
Oh my God!
Can you imagine Michael Jordan with Twitter back then?
Oh,
no, see, that's the problem.
He took everything to heart then. Oh, man.
He wouldn't have had to make things up.
He'd have a wall behind him. He'd be marking people's
names. Would he have a subtweet battle with or a burner account battle with KD?
You know I was going to say the same thing.
Do you know how dead Joel Embiid would be?
Oh, my God.
I
he would say one thing, like, I'm scoring 100 points on Joel Embiid this week.
I saw a post today. It was what modern-day NBA player would Michael Jordan hate the most? And it just listed off like KD, Steph, LeBron, and it had guys like Embiid, Chris Paul. Like, and I was going through like, it has to be Embiid.
It has
like,
to be Embiid.
Who talks the most? Embiid.
He talks a lot of trash and he hasn't won any titles.
Beverly. Oh, imagine Patrick Beverly.
I think
Beverly
he would
saying,
like Patrick Beverly. I think he would want Beverly on the team.
He would
want Beverly to be a bull.
He loved Allen Iverson. So, you know, it's not going to be any guy that talks trash and then goes out there and backs it up. It's gonna be like Embiid, who does back.
Or
it
might
up,
be KD because he's. I don't think he's gonna. He would
soft.
Respect KD.
He's soft. He's soft.
Going to the Warriors and making the greatest team of all time. The greatest team of all time that can only exist because of an anomaly in the salary cap and because of KD.
Now it's here's the weirdest. Here's a question: if KD ends up on a team with Michael, does KD just quit basketball forever, or does he become a better player?
I think he becomes a better player.
I don't think
because he really just wants to play basketball.
Does he get punched in practice though?
Yeah.
Now, like Karl Anthony Towns, I don't think Karl Anthony Towns could put up with Michael Jordan in the same way that he didn't really love Jimmy Butler.
So, yeah.
Like, I think, and Andrew Wiggins, I don't think he could handle Jordan. But I think a guy like Durant just wants to play basketball. He keeps saying over and over again, which is not necessarily true, but it's what he keeps saying. All right, this is good ball talk. We can go forever, but I don't want to. Go longer than an hour.
Yeah.
Thomas, thanks for coming on. Chief and Ryan, always a pleasure.
See you next week.
See you next week. Well, hi, I'm.